Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We started a little bit late, but it was worth the wait. I got some clips of some of the new material from my guest tonight. So I just had to download them real quick. I want to show them. Some of them, it's brand new stuff. So we got an exclusive. Anyway, I'm very honored to have two amazing guitar players, and they're part of guitar history, in my opinion. They've done some amazing sessions, and we're gonna be listening to some really cool stuff. Some of it blew me away going through the other couple of days working on stuff. I was pretty amazed at some of the different things that you guys were doing. There's two people here. First, Steve Postel. His career, very interesting. I immediately picked up on the fact that he played with Pure Prairie League, which is a group that I listen to a lot. But he had an interesting background. He played a lot for Broadway. He was a sideman and a session player, played on Evita and Man from La Mancha. He was also the music director for Leah, if I can pronounce this, Salonga. Anyway, she was on Miss Saigon and stuff, and he's also played with Jennifer Warnes and a bunch of other people. And we're going to play a clip in a minute. I'll play it now, a clip from his album, Time Still Knocking, which he won an award for, this song. He won the Hollywood Music Film Media Award. It was a winner for that. Music and Media, I'm sorry. But anyway, this is a dobro solo that he played on this, and it's just a really beautiful piece of music. So this is the opening for 345 coming through. Let me play that quick for you. Beautiful piece, and Steve, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Before I get started asking a bunch of questions, I'm going to introduce my other guest here, Danny Kirchmar, who's been on everything. I mean, immediately I think of Sweet Baby James, the album with James Taylor. He played on there, but he's played with so many people. Linda Ronstadt, Warren Zevon, Harry Nilsson. He was on Tapestry, Thoroughbred. He's played on so many albums, and he was in the I pick this out. He was in the original Flying Machine, which is in the lyric of one of the in James Taylor's song, which is about that. And he was in the Fugs. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I want to welcome Danny, but I'm going to play a clip, and this is one of the ones that we just downloaded. All She Wants to Do Is Dance, and this is from his new EP. Let me play this, and you get an idea what we're talking about. Guitar. I got to ask you first off, what were you using there?
On that, let me see if I can remember. It was a while ago. Probably, it was definitely a Telecaster. Telecasters. There's a baritone guitar playing the main rhythm, and baritone electric, and mm-hmm. then Telecasters.
Okay. And then what's your main go-to amp?
Well, lately I've been using a Quilter amp, mm-hmm. Quilter Aviator amp, which I absolutely love.
Those are nice.
Yeah, it's solid state, and everyone used to poo-poo solids, including me. But this particular amp is so beautifully designed that you could never, it would pass just about any test, mm-hmm. any ear test as to whether you could tell it was solid state or tube. It's just a really terrific amp that does a lot of things well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Let me ask a question to Steve really quick. Because I was looking up on your bio and stuff, and it really didn't tell me too much about your influences, where you came from, mm-hmm. and what you were listening to in the early days. A lot of the stuff that I heard on the album, Time's Still Knocking, just great finger picking and great mm-hmm. acoustic stuff. And I mean, you play electric too, but I noticed that it's just really, really tasteful stuff. So I just was curious where you got your ideas from, where it came from.
Well, I was also, when I was young, I had trained and I was a classical guitarist. I actually went to a conservatory, so I had the finger thing going. But I'd say that, you know, when I was playing guitar at 8. I was playing classical and Beatles music and folk music. But then, really, when James Taylor came out, it really changed, like what I was. Like the direction mm-hmm. of the approach, seeing how you could go from, because before it had been either classical or folk, mm-hmm. and then of course I heard this guy named Danny Kortchmar play, and that's why I got an electric guitar.
Now, when did you guys meet? Where did you guys first meet?
We met at the Troubadour,
right? Oh, okay.
During the reunion tour, I was working on this record that you have, and Leland Sklar was playing on it, and Russ Kunkel, and there was some mm-hmm. those guys. I'd never met Danny. And the guy who mixed it was named Nathaniel Kunkel, who's Russ's son. Mm-hmm. So Nathaniel invited me to the show, and we met that night. And
But you first heard him on the Sweet Baby James. Was that the first thing you heard him on?
Yeah. And then I'd go to the
concerts. That's a great album.
And it was a different kind of electric guitar playing, and it showed mm-hmm. you like you could integrate electric guitar with a finger picking with a song in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So Danny was a big influence on that, and James Taylor was a big influence on my finger-picking style.
Now, I noticed on Sweet Baby James, to direct us to Danny, I mean, obviously the album was fair. It was pretty much all acoustic, but right. But he did a lot of electric stuff. When I heard his live stuff, there was a lot of electric. Mm-hmm. So when you did that album, was that... it was all acoustic, right? You were just playing acoustic guitar, or did you do any electric on that?
I was mainly playing electric, but not on... I think I only played on 3 or 4 or 5 tunes on that.
Oh, okay.
It was mainly done. Peter Escher, being the intelligent, smart producer he is, realized he had to tone everything down so that James's acoustic and his vocal came through and nothing got in the way. Mm-hmm. So he wisely had everything on the down low except James. That's mm-hmm. where Russ Kunkel came up with those great fills on... Fire and Rain with brushes. He played with brushes.
That's still a killer sound. Right. It's just great. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the cello.
Right.
The cello was just added a whole new dimension to it, mm-hmm. which is interesting because on your album, you use a string quartet, mm-hmm. which was very, 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 very cool. And you have some, and you also use saxophone. There's some very interesting things that you did in there. I'm going to play a clip that I put together that shows with the string quartet. Now, and also one of the things I really want to mention first, on that first clip that I played for of Danny, he plays bass, drums, and guitar on there. So he does all of it. And on the other solo albums that I have of yours, Cooch and Innuendo, too, you play all the instruments, which is pretty cool.
Right. Well, on the first one, Cooch, I played all the instruments.
Oh, okay. So, you did on the other one you
the
had.
The other one was a full band.
Full section. Now, this song I'm going to play, it's called Long Way Home. There's a whole vocal thing in there. And it's I cut it out because I wanted to show the guitar parts. So I start out with the intro with the guitar, and then it goes into at the very end where the quartet plays. Mm. But I want everybody to listen to what he's doing. It's very subtle, what he's doing with the guitar. And some of it's arpeggiated, some of it's strum, but it's just very tasteful, and it's there. It's one of those things that shows, to me, what a good rhythm guitar player is, because when it's not there, you notice it, but it just kind of fills it. But there's little things that he's doing. You'll hear it come in and out on the track, and what he's doing, it kind of epitomizes what, you know, good playing. And it just fits in the spaces. So this is Long Way Home edit. Let me play that. Pure taste.
It's Dave Kaz on saxophone.
And then that quartet. That's a great arrangement.
Yeah, my friend Stephen Barber does a lot of great string arranging, did the arrangement on that.
Now, what guitar were you using on that?
On that record, it was mostly my Herringbone D28. But I'm not sure. On that tune, I don't think it was. I used a Guild D40 on that. It's been 6 years, I can't remember. A lot of guitars in the studio.
But there you can hear at the very end he's strumming, but he's doing some arpeggiated things, and it just comes in and out. It's not real in your face, but it's like it just adds. And then with the sax solo, it just complements it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an art to that. I don't think that a lot of people don't, you know, they don't know how to accompany all the time, and I think that's important because you really kind of set it off. I want to play another clip. Again, another edit. It's interesting because you're not really singing; you're narrating in this song. It's called "Time Still Knocking," the title tune. And I cut the first verse where you're talking, but listen to what he's doing, and we'll talk a little about your finger picking style. And then it comes in; it cuts to the end where the strings are in. So I wanted to show how it worked together. So let me play this one, this little clip, and then we'll talk about it. Thank you.
Albuquerque, New Mexico. 97th straight day of sunshine. To the east, the Sandias. 10,000 feet of pinyons and mountain flowers. To the west, the Mesa. All desert and lifeless volcanoes. I put my guitar into the empty bed of a 68 El Camino and drive off to my gig in the lobby bar of the El Dorado Hotel. I'll play just like a woman for a couple of tourists and a couple of drunks. They want to hear some blues and a little Hank Williams Jr. I'll play him some Hank Williams Sr. Strings still ring, eyes still cry. I can't find a good reason why. Dreams don't seem so real anymore. And time is still knocking at my door. At my door.
I love those strings. That's great. And you're playing guitar with Michael...
Michael Chaplin, who's a wonderful...
Now, is he doing all the little fills?
Or are you doing the... He's doing the fills in that, and I'm playing the... That's my part. And Michael also arranged...
did the string arrangement. I also noticed that Sid Page was playing on that. Yeah, Joel, he's a legend in the...
And Joel Derwin, who's...
So, but anyway, your folk style, what was your, were there any influences that you listened to folk-wise, or was that just from your classical...
No, well, I was, Leo Kottke was a huge influence on me, and at the time I learned a lot of his, as much of his stuff as I could.
Because that, the finger, it's just tasty, it's really tasty, and the way you layer it under what the narrative's going on is, it's just, it just sets right into the pocket. So, there's a bunch of different people on this album. I was talking a little bit before the show, I was trying to find guitar parts of you to talk about your guitar playing, but you have so many people on. It's amazing, and it's great because you've got some of the best people in the industry that are playing on the album. But anyway, it's just, it lays in the pocket really well, and that's what I noticed throughout the album is it's the way the layers, you have a lot of different layers in there. It's not in the way. It doesn't get in the way of the arrangement in the song.
That's the trick.
That's the trick, yes. Now, I'm going to turn the tide and talking about rhythm. I'm going to play a clip. It's an older clip of Danny's. But it just blew me away because I love this type. I mean, I was in my early days, I used to play a lot of R&B sessions, and that feel is special. You either have it or you don't have it. This is an older song. This is from his Cooch album, which was recorded around 1972-73. And it starts out with this really mellow thing, and it goes into this really cool rhythm thing. So listen to this guitar. It's just 100% taste and a real funky groove. This is called Sentimental Reasons. Let me play this clip for you.
I love you for sentimental reasons. To me,
baby, I love you.
And say we'll never part. 'Cause I think of you every morning, and I dream of you. reasons.
You know I love you, baby.
And I hope you do believe me.
Baby, I love you.
'Cause I've given you my heart.
That's great rhythm playing and the little fills that you do in there. Now, listening to you, when I've heard you on James Taylor and Jackson Browne and Carole King, and I want to mention, too, he's playing drums and bass, too, on that cut, mm-hmm. and it's tight. But that R&B feel, where did you get that? Where were your influences there?
Well, I grew up listening to that, to soul music and R&B. I was a complete fanatic about blues and R&B, and my main influences were always those records.
Oh, okay. But did you do a lot of sessions like that? Did you play any in the earlier days? Did you play a lot of R&B stuff?
Well, the first sessions I did really were with Carole. And actually, I played on the way I learned to play on records was playing on Carole's demos, Goffin and King demos. And that was in New York. I'm from New York. And in New York, everyone plays R&B to some degree.
Yeah.
All the guitar players. And so I learned a tremendous amount from playing on her records about what to do and what not to do, but also she hired me and she got me on that stuff, I guess, because she liked my natural approach anyway.
Because that, you, I mean, that feel, to get that feel, not everybody has that feel. It's to get in that pocket. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to, it's an intangible thing, but you know it when you know it.
Right.
And it's, I mean, that's some incredible stuff. And I want to play another clip from that album just to show some of the stuff that you were doing, because you were doing some pretty radical stuff on that album. For 72, I'm trying to remember, you know, what I was listening to. I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening in the late 60s and 70s, but you were kind of pushing the you know, you were pushing it a little bit and going into some interesting areas. This song, you have a guitar lead in there, and you're also playing sitar guitar, and there's a mellotron in this. Mm-hmm. So this is called Burnt Child. I want to play this real quick, and we can talk a little bit more about the idea behind the album, because you really went in a lot of different areas, and it's really, I mean, the R&B stuff is just killer on it. Mm-hmm. And but let's play this. This is Burnt Child. Now, I'm going to quickly play one little clip of this to kind of show the diversity of the album. Then we'll talk about it, because it's important. You're doing a it reminded me a lot of War, the group War, but it's called Up Jump the Devil. Mm-hmm. And you're doing the drums, guitar, and bass. And the flute is Jim Horn, sure. Which is one of the, I think it was one of the Wrecking Crew.
Yes.
And William Smith is on the organ.
Yep.
But it gives you an idea. This is all on the same album, and it's just... It goes in a lot of different places, and I think that's kind of cool. And in I think part of it was the era too. You were able to experiment a lot more, and I think that was good because you went in some other. This isn't even close to what you were doing, I think, with Carole King or any other people. But I think it's interesting to see where you were taking it. And let me play this clip, and then we'll talk a little bit about your approach to the album.
Did not know right from wrong. Then the time came round for the judgment day. Tried to break my deal in every which way, yes, sir. But I took the devil with his two best friends. Was too much. I was such a soft touch. My will was not too strong. Did not know right from wrong. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I didn't know right from wrong, but it's too late. Whoa, yeah, up jumped the devil. With a started line, with a red suit on, with his toothless green mama. Up jumped the devil, oh, yeah, yeah. Up jumped the devil. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That was pretty hip. And that was pretty for its time, and that, and you're playing bass and drums on that, and that bass line's killer. It's a great bass line, but even your rhythm guitar, you're playing up in the, you know, you were doing a wah wah thing in there, and then you're doing this high guitar thing. It reminded me of, I learned about it later in the later 70s, was it's like, it's kind of like a skanking. We used to call it skanking, that kind of playing.
Right.
But the when you did this album, what were you trying to say?
Well, I don't know what I was trying to say. I was just using everything I knew that I wasn't able to do on the various sessions and stuff that I was doing. I had to be way more restrained playing with Carol and James, certainly, than I was able to be on this. But again, when I listened to it, I realized how amazingly dated it sounds. You know, this is such a long time ago. I know more now.
Well, I'm sure.
I just wanted to try it.
I mean, what you were doing was, I mean, there were some amazing things. I mean, there's a lot of influences. Yeah, maybe somebody today might not remember all of that stuff, but there was some things that you were doing that was really cool. And you got to remember at that time, a lot of people weren't doing a lot of that kind of stuff. And, well, back then you were able to stretch more, I think. I think the record companies let you experiment.
Well, yeah, that was on Warner Brothers, and they were a great, great label. And you know, they championed a lot of artists, and they certainly gave me free rein.
Now, when you were doing the demos, would you have to do a lot? Would you have to make a song into a funk song to sell if they were selling a song to a... Were you like recording songs for specific artists when you were working with Carol when you were doing the demo, or you're just doing her demos?
It was her demos, and she and Jerry were writing a lot of songs, and they were for you know, they were getting covered by everybody. You know, Carol and Jerry wrote a million songs for all kinds of R&B acts and pop stuff back in the day, kind of pre-Beatles stuff.
Because I remember out here, I was West Coast. There were guys that were session guys that were just doing demos for, you know, they would, you know, like United Artists had their own music publishing, and they would basically bring in these guys and play a song. And, you know, if it was like, for example, the Jackson 5, they'd say, play it like, you know, they would play it. So they would kind of give them an idea what it would sound like. So they were like doing, it was kind of like sound-alikes, but using the original song. I don't know if you ever experienced that.
Well, I'm not sure. Some of the stuff that Carol and Jerry were writing was deliberately for certain people. And some of it was just, you know, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what would stick. Because they were very prolific. And they had an awful lot of songs in a lot of different styles. The Beatles had come out and the Birds, and the music had changed right then. And Carol and Jerry were making the transition from the kind of Brill Building situation to... a situation where the groups were writing their own tunes.
Right.
So they were very much influenced by Dylan and Lennon McCartney, of course.
Were you aware at the time of the Wrecking Crew? Did you know that there was the session guys for like the Birds? Did that come out, or was that pretty unknown at the time?
That was pretty unknown at the time, but I knew it. It was common knowledge.
It was common knowledge.
Among the players, yeah.
And when did you come out to L.A.?
It was around 68.
You probably ran into him in the sessions?
Just at the very, very end. The Cats I was playing with, Russell and Leland, we kind of were the next Wrecking Crew. We kind of took over where they left off. Yeah.
Now, on this album that you what were you... Do you remember what you were using for that at that time? What type of a... Was that a Tele or was that a Strat?
Yeah, it was probably this Tele right here, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about that real quick.
Okay.
You've got a lot of modifications on that guitar.
Right. Well, this guitar, my gear was stolen out of my place on Hollywood Boulevard. And at the time, I was working with Lou Adler, and I begged him to buy me another couple of guitars so I could work. And I went to Wallach's Music City, which used to be on Hollywood and Vine. It used to be a record store, and they sold musical instruments as well. So I got this guitar. I got this and an Everly Brothers acoustic guitar. And after playing it for a little while, I wanted to make some changes in it, so I brought it over to fellow named Red Rhodes, a fine steel guitar player, mm-hmm. was had a repair shop, guitar repair shop. Mm-hmm. And working in that guitar repair shop was Jeff Skunk Baxter.
Oh, okay.
So I gave this guitar to Jeff, and I said, well, I'll do something with it, you know. And he did this really heavy mod with it, obviously. There's a lot of switches and stuff on it, mm-hmm. a lot of options. And he did an amazing thing with it. As we all know, Jeff is a very heavy technical guy and a very, very brilliant individual, not just a great guitar player, but a major brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it just worked out well. At the time, if you remember back in the 70s, everybody did mods on their guitars, even really valuable ones,
mm-hmm.
which is why it was hard to find a Telecaster or a Stratocaster that was stock from the 50s, because they'd all been modified.
Right.
And this one, too. But this is a CBS guitar, for his post-CBS. So it wasn't particularly valuable or a collector's item.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no compunction about screwing with it. And
yeah, it's a thin line. And is it a 3-bolt or 4-bolt in the
four
back?
Bolt.
4-bolt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, and it looks like it's an ash body with a maple neck?
I think so, yeah.
Now,
you know, there's nothing particularly brilliant about this guitar, I guess, except that it's, you know, been played a lot. And the more you play it, Steve will tell you the same thing, the guitar starts to take on a character.
Yeah. Well, also, too, I mean, a lot of my guitars and a lot of my friends that were doing sessions were modifying their guitars. I don't think that, especially after the CBS bought Fender,
right.
They weren't as good as your pre-CBS ones. So people tended to modify a lot. I mean, almost every guitar I've had has had some type of modification done to it.
Right.
But I think that was part of the norm. It wasn't considered. Today, it's a collector's market. There's a whole different, besides your players, there's your collectors. So they're like, they want the pristine. But as a player, you want it to do what you want it to do.
Right.
So you're going to make it do it. You're going to change the parts to make it sound the way you want.
Well, you want it to fit whatever the role that it's going to play.
Right.
To me, this guitar and most guitars generally look like a monkey wrench. They're like a tool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a dentist. I don't buy it to hang it on the wall. To me, it's got to be.
It's a work. Yeah.
It's a working tool.
And on this guitar, you have a humbucker in the neck position,
right.
And then you have a lipstick like Dan Electro type pickup in
That's
the middle.
Right. Yeah.
And then is that just a standard Tele or something special?
Well, especially wound, actually.
Okay.
By a couple that lives right near Steve. In fact, they did it for me.
Okay.
And I'm about to get this lipstick. I'm about to get a pickup from Seymour Dunk, which is a stacked lipstick. That's it. So
oh,
it's
wow.
two lipsticks.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Now you use the Aviator.
Right.
And you do you
Quilter, yeah.
the Quilter Aviator and do you still mic it or you go direct? Because that's pretty has a good preamp. It's pretty versatile.
You can go at the back of the Quilter and it sounds great and doesn't affect the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly they mic it in clubs, but you can go out of the back of it. It's a mm-hmm. very very flexible and resourceful amp.
Do you find now when you do session work or when you're recording, do you mic or do you basically go in line?
Well, I haven't done session work in a while, but generally I would definitely mic. Engineers like to.
What about you?
Always mic it. Unless I'm going for some. If I'm on a score, I might be going for something where I specifically want to use plugins and get some wild sound.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going for a guitar sound, you want to stick a mic or two or three in front of an amp.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think moving air, it's a unique thing.
Nothing like it.
It's
right.
just, you know, with the right speaker, right microphone, it's gold. So, Steve, you have a new album coming out. Can you give us a little sneak preview of what you're...
Yeah, we'll play a little bit of something off that record. And it's funny, he's talking about guitars being tools. When this company, Rockbridge, made me this guitar, and the guy who made it for me said that there was one condition, which is that when he came back in a year, it had scratches and belt marks on it. Because he knows I keep my guitars, so he wanted me. He said, "Take that out."
I don't blame you. That's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah, but I've been given permission to beat it up. I'm looking at the sky.
sky. Feeling kind of small. I'm looking at my life. Make some sense of it all. Got my hands full of dirt. Got my feet in a hole. Got my tools from the shed. I'm digging out my soul. When there's nothing more to gain, nothing more to lose, trying to stay out of the rain, trying to keep up with the news. I'm looking for the truth, and I'm walking through these blues. I got some brand new shoes for walking through. Stay out of the rain, trying to keep up with me. I'm looking for the truth, and I'm walking through these blues. I'm looking for the truth, and I'm walking through these blues. I got some brand new for walking through these blues. For walking through these blues in my brand new shoes. Walking through.
This is beautiful, and that's on the coming up.
Yep.
On the new album. Yep. That's great. And Dan, your tone on that guitar, it might be an old guitar, it's definitely more than just a tool.
Well,
it sounds great.
This guitar sounds very good with other guitars, which is why it's a go-to guitar.
Now, you were using which pickup were you using there?
Let's see, I guess the lipstick mostly.
The lipstick. Mm-hmm. It's a great sound. Mm-hmm. While you're changing over, you're going to pull out your electric. I'm going to play another tune from on Danny's album, on his new album, the EP. What's the name of the EP?
It's just called Danny Kortchmar.
Danny Kortchmar. Okay, this is called Honey, Don't Leave L.A. I pulled the last part where he's doing the lead so you can get an idea where he's at now, because this is the latest thing that he's done. Listen to this, and then we'll have him play again.
Thank you.
Now, that's a perfect example when you have a drummer and bass player and guitar player of the same mind. Mm-hmm. That is tight. Mm-hmm. That is really, really tight. Now, that's the Tele?
Yeah.
And you're using the Aviator? The Quilter? Is that the Quilter?
You know, I think that's before I got the Quilter amp back.
Because that tone is just killer.
You know, it's mostly... comes from here. You know.
It's in the fingers. Mm-hmm. No, that's true. But, I mean, that's just... It's just great. But all of the stuff that I've listened to, even on the older albums, again, with you doing the drums and the bass mm-hmm. and all of that, it's... it's just tight. It's really, really tight. Sure. But still, it still works. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people are against overdubbing. But I think in your case, it totally works. It's just great. Now you pulled out the Jarrell.
Philip Jarrell made me this. It's a semi-hollow with a block in the middle. Beautiful. This was a prototype, actually.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful guitar.
The inlay on it is just it's to die for. Okay. All right. Let's let you guys try something with both of the electric guitars.
So we'll do this tune, Machine Gun Kelly.
Okay, and this is from your new album.
Yeah, no, this is originally recorded by James Taylor on his Mudslide Slim album.
Okay.
But at the time, it's very different. Actually, Steve is going to play like the James type part, and I'm going to play the me type part on it.
Okay, okay, all right.
Let me get a better sound here. Like that. Tell you about Machine Gun Kelly. Travel down the outlaw trail. Machine Gun Kelly was a desperate man, but the missus was hard as nails. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let her run around. Don't let a woman make you out to be a clown. Let me tell you about Catherine Kelly. She's tired of being such small time. They figure if they kidnapped a rich man's son, they'd make it in the world of crime. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let her run you around. Don't let a woman make you out to be a clown. Watch out, Machine Gun Kelly, be careful of what you do. If you keep listening to your old lady, there ain't no telling what'll happen to you. Machine Gun. Well, the government boys that come up on Machine Gun came and took that boy away. They stuck him in a hole in Leavenworth prison, and he lived there till his dying day. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let her run you around. Don't let a woman make you out to be a clown.
Awesome. That's great. Well, we're almost out of time. I do want to mention a couple of things. Again, that album is called Danny Korchmore, and I found it on Amazon, but it's on all the outlets. Mm-hmm. You can get it.
That album is mainly covers. It's covers of tunes that I wrote. Mm-hmm. A tune there that Jackson recorded, and a couple of tunes Don Henley recorded.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
A couple of tunes that James Taylor recorded. So.
Yeah, you wrote. You co-wrote. New York Minute.
I did.
Yes. Very, very great. Great song.
You're right.
There's two things I want to mention, Steve. First of all, you've put together a music instruction app called On the Path.
Yeah, that's not... We did that when we had a... It's actually unfortunately not available when the OS changed, technical reason, but we had Jackson Brown and Richard Thompson, all these wonderful people. But we're doing a new, getting ready to do something called Your Music Path, which will have similar kind of lessons and so on. That's coming up next year.
Oh, okay, because I know that, I just wanted to mention that you are involved in education.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to mention, too, is the Night Train Music Club. Can you explain a little more about that?
Well, that's I'm really glad that Danny moved here, because now he's part of it. The Night Train Music Club was a sort of an idea I had based on the fact that I had a band for about 10 years, toured all over the country and all over the world, called Little Blue. When I came out here, I realized that most of the cats that I like to play with are often on the road or working or doing something. In order to have a band, I'd have a rotating band. And also the idea is that we all really started out just jamming in garages. I mean, that's what they, right? And there's not as many opportunities to do that anymore. So it's a collaborative venture, and Danny and I have been doing a lot of it. We just played last night with Steve Ferroni from the Heartbreakers.
Well, you guys you play every week, right?
We play every week at a place called the Buffalo Club every Wednesday. And it's guys from Jackson's band and Lucinda Williams' band, and Alfonso Johnson played last week. And so whoever's there, you know, we do a lot of those songs that Danny mentioned that he wrote for other people. And so it's a really cool, and it's always different. If a guy's on the road, we get another guy. And yeah.
Now, you got, what's coming up for this Wednesday? Do you know who's going to be on?
This Wednesday is Travis Carlton, Larry Carlton's son on bass, killer bass player, and Michael Jerome is on drums from Richard Thompson's band, Jeff Young from Sting and Jackson Brown's band on keys, Cara Granger, who's a wonderful blues guitarist, blues singer, myself, and my sister Susan Postel is going to sing, and then guests come in, and Danny's moving, so he can't do it this week.
That's right.
but now, Danny, do you ever play drums or bass on it?
On the Night Train Music Club? Oh, no. He's got the greatest bass players and drummers around.
No, I know you're killer, but you're good. Wow. You're really good.
He did play. We went in the studio, and Danny played on that, and can't beat it.
No, there's, I mean, that's not... I'm serious about that. Anyway, the album right now that's available, you're going to be coming out probably in the fall.
In the fall.
Yeah. But the album I have is Time Still Knocking. Get it? It's a really good album. There's a lot of different people on this album. And the songs are great. And just musically, the arrangements are
Thank you.
Stellar. And Danny's stuff... You know, I mean, it's the albums that I've heard, the Cooch and Innuendo, and this new one is just great. I'm going to play this clip. It's from this album, and the reason I put it on is because you have everybody on this song. It's called Straight for the Moon.
I wrote that with John Oates from Home Notes. Yeah.
And you and Waddy Wachtel are playing guitar. And the guitar solo is Eric Johnson. The bass is Leland Sklar. Drums, Steve Ferrone. Piano, Benmont Tench
from the Heartbreakers.
Yeah. Backing vocals is John Oakes. And then Peter Adams on keyboards, Deborah Dobkin on percussion, and T-Bone Whack on accordion.
Yeah.
Everybody's in there. So, I mean, it's a great cut. And I want to thank you guys for being on the show. It's just, you guys are amazing players. And we just touched the scratch the surface. We gotta do it again. I gotta have you guys come back.
Great.
So I'd love to have you guys back on the show. Everybody, check out these albums. They're very good, and I recommend them. There's some great playing on them, and it just shows it's a good example of taste and great arrangements. How things set in the pocket, and I want to stress that. Okay, so I'm gonna play this song. Everybody have a great week. Straight for the Moon is the name of the tune. And everybody, we will see you guys next week.
Father and my brother's son.
live and die in a Freeport town. Mothers and wives in the cold, cruel sea. Children, lovers, and destiny. When the wind is right and the sails are set, in the morning light, you can place your bet that I'll be free again. I'll raise the ropes by dawn. I'll be at sea by noon, headed straight for the sails are set in the morning light. You can face the